Good morning.
Good morning.
You'll have to excuse me. My throat's got a frog or something living in it, but what the heck? People wishing to connect with the spiritual often seek it in places of great beauty. There's something in nature which connects humankind with the infinite. People are moved by the tall mountains of the Sierra, the magnificent forests of Yosemite, the beauty of the sea. Others find solace in the colorful depths of the Grand Canyon or the quiet, dry, stark landscape of Death Valley. I would like to suggest that one can also find practical and spiritual lessons in more humble and commonplace surroundings. Even some that would seem really unlikely. Excuse me. Recently, I had need to go to an automotive dismantling facility. In less sensitive times, we call these places junkyards. Places that recycle those iron monsters that have come to dominate our lifestyle. Although they are dirty, greasy, often odd-smelling and ugly, found in the poorer parts of town, and have a somewhat seedy reputation, junkyards have a great deal to teach us, if we are sensitive enough to see the lesson. And the primary lesson is humility. None of humankind's works lasts forever. Standing among the wrecks, you are reminded that they all were once shiny and new. Somebody's great pride. And now, only a few years later, they are forlorn and unwanted. In some ways, they resemble the people who rode in them. Once, people were cute and young and loved. Then many, many years later, too many of them are lonely and ignored. Some are even relegated to human junkyards, jails, prisons, nursing homes, places like that. I'm reminded of this when I walk over to the area where the old taxis are kept. Sad yellow hulks in once bright paint jobs, resting and rusting after 400,000 or more weary miles. They have an interesting history. Most of the big Fords started out proudly as shiny police cars, defending our homes and families. And when they reached middle age, they were repainted and ended their lives as taxis. When they finally wore out, they were driven to a bleak, unsentimental retirement in which their unhonored hulks are taken apart piece by piece and then finally crushed and melted to be reincarnated into new products. While this is a sad fate for the once proud defenders of law and order, the other wrecks are silent witnesses to tragedy. A family car, the front end smashed, broken windows, the airbags popped out, bloodstains on the seats, a few toys and other possessions left behind. What happened here? Did loved ones die? Were bright futures snuffed out? Why? Carelessness? Alcohol? Or was this family the innocent victims of someone else's mistake. What kind of people were they? Who loved them? Who mourned for them? And how hard did they have to fight with their insurance company? As you walk around in this exercise in urban archaeology, you see small personal items left behind in many of the cars. You also see massive damage to the metal, a silent reminder of the pain and misfortune someone suffered. Who were these people? We'll never know, although a few of the cars have clues as to their owners. Plastic crosses, parking permits, Jesus statues, St. Christopher medals, bumper stickers. This family belonged to a very exclusive country club. That family urged everyone to vote for Bush. Another enjoyed a roadside attraction in Arizona. A fourth made a plea to coexist. A particularly mangled car advises shit happens. They were probably the UUs. My favorite was the one that cautioned, "Be careful of the Earth. It may be the only planet that has chocolate." This field of broken cars and shattered dreams covers many, many acres. One yard I know of covers 26 acres. Three or four is more common. But there's another like it down the street, and more in the next town, and in the next county. One thinks of Shelley's Ozymandias. "Look upon my works, ye mighty, and despair." Segregation and class consciousness are also practiced here. Junkyards are not worthy to exist in polite company. They're part of the unsavory aspects of life that many would prefer to ignore or hide. So they are generally zoned into obscure locations where they will not offend society's tender sensibilities. But this even exists in the yards themselves. Mercedes, Lexus, BMW, and the rest of the automotive nobility occupy their private domain. While unloved Yugos, Fiats, and other cheap brands are banished to a dark corner of the lot. Some yards only concentrate on the better class of cars or specialize in particular brands. The lowest sort of yards are analogous to thrift shops. In these, customers have to bring their own tools and remove whatever parts they want all by themselves, and then drag them to a check stand where a bored cashier rings up the total based on a price chart nailed to the wall. Cars that don't sell are eventually picked up by forklift trucks and shoved into a crusher, where they're flattened to a pile about a foot thick, stacked on trucks and carried off to a foundry, where they are shredded and then melted down to begin a new life as something else. This puts the car in reincarnation. In supreme irony, the handcuffs the police put on a drunk driver may be made from the metal of a car he ran off the road some years before. Poverty is a constant reminder in these lesser yards. The employees function at minimum wage, and people getting parts are certainly not rich. since they actually drive Rattletrap 1980s models. The wrecks, having passed through several owners, are dilapidated, and a substantial number have worn-out tires, bad brakes, wobbly steering, and other neglected safety features. The parts cannibalized, and that's the right word, from these wrecks will go on cars that are only slightly better. They still run. A pitiful car such as that may be the one that rear-ends you the next time you stop suddenly for a dog running in the road. On the highways, no man is an island. You can be the best driver in the world, driving the finest car, never had a traffic ticket, and a drunk driving a 1966 Chevy that only fires on three cylinders and achieved gross polluter status at its last smog test can run into you and kill you and your family. Even if you're stopped at a red light. That is the lesson of equality. You can be as snobbish and pretentious as you want, but you have to share the highway with everyone else. So, if you don't believe in taxes and regard public roads as creeping socialism, the resulting poor maintenance will increase your cost of car repairs and increase your chances of an accident. Even private roads are not immune. Somebody has to look after them. And that somebody may be cutting corners on the quality of materials and deferred maintenance. So, in our little tour of the junk world, we have learned humility. It doesn't matter how special you think you are. You can end up dying in a hospital, and your car can end up rusting in a junkyard. We've learned the interconnectedness of everyone. You cannot run a road system on rugged individuality. The actions of every other driver you encounter can affect you. This is one aspect of our seventh principle, respect for the independent web of all existence of which we are a part. The junkyard also illustrates the inherent complexity of the idea of freedom. Simplistic souls think freedom means doing anything they want. But our understanding of the seventh principle shows that this is false. A false notion of freedom would say you could drive anywhere you want in any manner you choose. In this view, traffic laws are an infringement and a limitation on one's freedom. But in reality, this limitation actually creates more freedom. It creates the freedom of not getting killed, and that's a pretty important freedom. By imposing order on the chaos of traffic, it benefits everyone and upholds our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. This was clearly illustrated during the term of former Governor Pete Wilson, who, for political reasons, decided to stop issuing driver's licenses to persons with immigration and documentation issues. Historically, the driver's license was proof that one had passed the driving test. It made a handy ID for writing checks, but it was never regarded as proof of citizenship. The majority of Wilson's supporters were unaware of this fact, and it generally just didn't go to Mexico or other countries. The changes in the law that Wilson pushed through the legislature were very wide in their consequences. People without licenses cannot register cars or buy insurance. This meant that people had to register their cars in the name of a friend or relative, or more commonly, just not register them at all. As a result, they didn't buy very good cars, and they didn't take care of them, since they could be towed off at any time by the police. The inability to buy insurance meant that there were now a large number of uninsured motorists on the roads. When these drivers were involved in an accident, they often left the scene. This caused a major increase in hit-and-run accidents. Police officers who worked traffic accidents, and it was a police officer who told me all about this, generally were not supportive of Wilson's move. Again, historically, undocumented persons who had driver's licenses registered their cars, bought insurance, and acted responsibly in the event of an accident. I was told by the head of an ambulance company that undocumented persons generally paid their hospital and ambulance bills, even if they could only do it in a series of small installments. There was a strong motivation to blend in and follow the law to avoid deportation. The theory behind denying driver's licenses was that if immigrants couldn't get licenses, they'd go back where they came from. This is a classical example of magical thinking and utterly disconnected from reality. Drive illegally or go back home and watch your family starve. Not much of a choice. This should remind us of our sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. By denying the inherent worth and dignity of this group of people, Wilson and his immigrant-bashing friends created a far worse problem. And this stupidity spread to other states. Even now, attempts to return to the previous system are being opposed for political reasons, the bottom line of which is that Mexicans are somehow inferior to U.S. citizens. It's interesting to contrast with this with the attitude toward Canadians who are able to fit in. The exception to this may be Justin Bieber. According to Time magazine, and Time would never lie, over 250,000 people signed an online petition to deport him back to Canada. This probably also teaches us how seriously we ought to take online petitions. This should remind us of our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. One has to be totally oblivious to walk through a graveyard of wrecked cars and not feel some compassion for the former occupants. A sea of unseen suffering and unknown faces. Just reflecting on this ought to stimulate some spiritual growth and acceptance of one another in accordance with our third principle, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth. It also affects our fourth principle because it involves a search for truth and meaning. And it should stimulate us to act on the basis of our fifth principle, to use the democratic process to improve the situation in as many ways as we can. Of course, to use the democratic process, we must make ourselves fully aware of the issues and give a great deal of thought to the consequences. We should have the integrity to admit when we were wrong, because even the best of us are wrong some of the time. We must not let imperfect ideas or our egos get in the way of what's right. The key is learning from our mistakes. When we're driving, we'll take a wrong turn now and then. Even GPS devices sometimes get it wrong. And we must have the willingness to consult a map or even ask someone. That's why they trained all those women astronauts. When they got lost in space, somebody could ask for directions. Also, we must not be confused by a false notion of freedom. We seem to be emerging from the wasteful and ill-advised fad of deregulation that swept the country a few years ago. When I'm driving down the road, I want the freedom to pick a gas station that sells gas that will not damage my car, and the freedom not to get food poisoning at a randomly chosen restaurant. If I have to consult a mechanic, I want the freedom to select a shop at random and know that I'll get competent work. Regulations and restrictions frequently increase people's freedom, but it takes a certain amount of wisdom to grasp this and to tell the difference between those that expand our freedom and those that shrink it. It isn't always obvious. Junkyards are not the only places we can find spiritual meaning in the ordinary actions of our lives. Paradoxically, in our search for something beyond the ordinary, we can discover our basic UU principles in settings that are very ordinary. Junkyards are merely one example. Other examples can be found everywhere. If we are aware of our surroundings and not preoccupied or oblivious, it's not necessary to go to exotic places or engage in rigorous practices. If we're willing to look, we can often find the key right under our noses. Thank you.